everybody. You are listening to Hotter Than Health, episode 69. My name is Eliza Gelman, the creator of the Hotter Than Health podcast and nutrition fanatic. This is a podcast focusing on fitness, nutrition, health, overall healthy lifestyles, and of course, your morning conference call. And if you don't know what that is, this is probably the only episode where we're not going to talk about that. Today is a super special episode. We have one of my favorite human beings on planet Earth. We have Miss Morgan Benz. She is a licensed clinical therapist in Charleston. I met her through going through therapy through mutual friends, and we just became fast friends. She is absolutely a dream, so eloquent, so well-spoken. Truly, she leads with compassion every single day, and she is one of those people that as soon as you meet her, you feel like you've known her forever. We're going to be talking a lot about anxiety. We're going to be talking about relationships, coping skills, different tactics you can implement into your day-to-day lifestyle to help with anxiety or stressors, triggers that may come up, and also just ways to feel a little bit more gratitude. We talk about self-worth and how it really boils down to that. Her clientele, just to give you guys a little bit of background, her clientele and her demographic is typically women in the range of the 20 to 40 year old range, whether it's moms, single moms, whether it's just girls who are single out in Charleston. You know, there's a lot of different people that she works with, and we kind of just boil it down to the nitty gritty of what she sees on a day-to-day basis. So you guys are going to truly love this episode. Before we get into it though, I want to make sure you guys follow her on Instagram. It is at welcoming.wellness. She is taking new clients, so if you're in the Charleston area, please hit her up. She is incredible. Also, if you do want to schedule any kind of nutrition consults, let me know. You can always shoot me a DM, follow me on Instagram at ElizaG_fitness, or check out the website where we have most of the podcast information as well as booking. We're going to get into it. One last announcement that I will be putting Project Momentum back up on the website starting tomorrow, so that anyone who was not a part of Project Momentum for this period, you can go ahead and purchase it, get those meal guides, all those good things. You're just not going to have the Facebook group, but truly the content, it's worth it and it's great. I hope you guys all enjoy it. And without further ado, this is Morgan Benz with Welcoming Wellness. What's up, everybody? This is Eliza Gelman of Hotter Than Health. I'm sitting here with Morgan Benz of Welcoming Wellness. We are in her office on a beautiful Wednesday afternoon. We're going to be talking a little bit about mental health, anxiety, stress, and some hot topics like that. I'm going to let her take over. Morgan, hello.
Hey, I'm so pumped to be here, Eliza. Hey.
We've been trying to get this podcast going for like 5 months, yes. Probably off and on.
Yes.
So now is finally the time. Tell everyone about yourself, what you do, about Welcoming Wellness.
Cool.
Let's go.
Thanks for having me. I feel so honored to be here with you. So where do I start? I have a practice, Welcoming Wellness. Been in practice for a little over 2 years now. And it has been quite the transformation. Right now I'm working with predominantly women from ages 20 to 40 that are going through all sorts of different things, relationship issues, different types of life stressors, transitions, lots of anxiety, depression. But, you know, those are primarily the issues that I'm working with. And, you know, it's just remarkable the type of women that we have in our community and, you know, the things that I get to learn from them, and hopefully some things that we can discover and hear together. And kind of the root of my practice is using their emotions, our emotions, as, you know, instructions, and some additional information, so that, you know, we can have some insight to what's around us and, you know, what's stressing us out, and kind of find really the insight to gain a lot of richness and how we can care for ourselves in the best possible way. And, you know, lead them to a full and vibrant life, and minimize their stress and anxiety as much as possible.
Love that. And you even said it like right off the bat. You said figuring out your emotions,
yeah,
and how to read that.
Yeah.
And just for anyone listening who doesn't know this, I used to go see Morgan
She was my therapist first, and I, not first from anyone, but just before this, and we started talking about, like, grief and about anxiety, and it all started with, I guess, just work stress, and then not knowing how deep, like, grief and guilt and stress played a huge part in all of that, and being able to label emotions was huge. And I think that you taught me that, and it's now become a conversation, using emotions as a part of conversation and normalizing it. You just touched on stress a lot, and we hear this all the time. I'm so stressed out. I'm like, I'm just a stressful person, or I have constant anxiety. What's the difference between stress and anxiety? Like, what do you hear a lot about anxiety and stress?
Well, I think the biggest thing between anxiety and stress is anxiety is almost to the point where it's debilitating. You know, all of us experience stress in one way, shape, or form. And it should be normalized because it is normal. And right now, thank goodness, anxiety is becoming normalized as well. Lots of my clients right now are performing at a high function of anxiety. And, you know, I know you and I have talked about this, and we just have... particularly women, you know, are overthinking, people pleasers, have the inability to slow down, trouble setting boundaries, saying no, you know, having a fear of failure. And on the outside, those things really look like a successful human being and almost achieving perfection. Whereas on the inside, like, these high functioning, anxious women are feeling really raw and, you know, it feels tight, it feels exhausting, it feels chaotic. And, you know, I think the difference between stress and that sort of high-functioning anxiety is, you know, stress is something that we all share, whereas anxiety, I think, can feel very isolating and alone.
That's a really good point. Because it's like, you know, even if you have a migraine that you think is the worst migraine in the world, you think that nobody else has had a migraine that bad.
Yeah.
Or when you get that feeling of anxiety and you're, like, physically, your pupils get small, you kind of get tunnel vision, your chest starts to get tight, you think that nobody can relate to that feeling, but the more you talk about it, the more you can actually describe that feeling and recognize it when other people are describing it. Not to normalize it to a sense to make it not important.
Yeah, exactly.
But making it so that you know that there are ways to live with it and cope with it. But you just said, you said there are so many women who are dealing with this crippling anxiety, which is, you're calling it high functioning anxiety. And you said on the outside that looks like, so what are, like, if I were to be out on the street, like, you could have high functioning anxiety right now and I would have no idea.
Exactly.
Because you are the picture of, like, youth, health, beauty, happiness, lightness, levity. But I know that there's shit going on. Everyone has shit going
on. For sure.
So what is it, like, tell me about a person, like, let's use some, like, Judy Jones as an example.
Yeah.
So what would someone with high functioning stress, a day-to-day look like? What's going on in their mind, but what do you think we're seeing?
So we're seeing just, like, normal day-to-day, someone that's extremely successful, someone that is able to, like, get all the things done, right? That we're almost, like, in amazement of. Whereas on the inside, you know, this person is feeling so much angst because they're having trouble setting boundaries of saying no and putting themselves first, right? Like, taking care of self. And then along with that comes, you know, them feeling, like, resentful towards other people because they're not setting boundaries and saying no to plans, to obligations, to, you know, work things. All, you know, all of those things are leading to this chaos inside. You know, you look at these high-functioning women that have this really busy schedule and they're capable of, like, taking their children to school and then going to work and then hitting
working
that
out.
Exercise class, yeah. And then cooking dinner, and then, you know, and that's the working mom. Or you have women, you know, close to our age that are working, maintaining social lives, relationships, marriages, working out, you know, all mm-hmm. those things, eating healthy, like being all of these things, whereas, you know, inside that's really, really exhausting. And for us, or the person on the outside, that looks like perfection. And, you know, ultimately that's what they're striving for, which, as we all know, is unattainable. And I've recently done a lot of work, not only myself, but, you know, with other people, and just sitting and being, you know, and talking a lot about doing less rather than doing more, and like feeling those emotions, feeling that angst, and then acknowledging some of those triggers that go along with where that anxiety is coming from. And a big one that's showing up is saying yes to things that they would prefer to say no to. And like really honing in on like their energy and what is important to them, and implementing self-care in terms of like being able to sit on their own or take care of themselves mm-hmm. before saying yes to all these other obligations mm-hmm. Or people or things.
Do you think that women have a bigger issue with anxiety because, and I mean, I think we could just dismiss stress. Everyone's stressed, okay?
Sure.
We're all stressed.
Mm-hmm.
Anxiety. Do you think that women suffer more with anxiety because, I mean, a number of different factors. Of course, there's hormones, which are actually very real.
Mm-hmm.
Like, sometimes they get low, sometimes they get high,
mm-hmm.
whatever. That's kind of out of our control in some ways. But we also, females, just have a higher, more attuned instinct. So when we're saying yes to things that we know we should be saying no to, I feel like that also causes some type of stress or anxiety within us because, like, it's in our innate instinct to know we should have said no to this, but we're just piling it on. Do you think that adds another level of stress? Because it's not just something like, I think I should say yes, but you know you should say no.
Yeah.
Is that a practice? Do people need to practice that? Like, what does it look like to say no and then not beat yourself up about it so bad that you wish you had just said yes?
100%, Eliza. And I think such a common core of anxiety is being out of alignment with our values and our beliefs
mm-hmm.
and doing things like saying yes to things that are completely out of alignment of what we actually believe in or what we truly want to be doing sets us out of alignment, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like increases our anxiety. So something that I love to do in my office with, you know, women that are experiencing this is having them write down like their list of core values and core beliefs. And when things show up for them, like, I don't know, going out, like going for drinks with friends or like after work, post-work happy hour, something like that, you know, and one of their values or their like core beliefs is maintaining health or getting enough sleep or, you know, finishing a book or ensuring that they are getting enough rest, but at the same time they're saying yes to these plans that they know are like disturbing those core values for them, that's when they can understand, okay, this is something that's triggering for me, that I'm saying yes to these things that are pushing me out of alignment, like
mm-hmm.
pushing me out of the things that I value so much.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't even have to be time alone. Like, you might value your relationship. You might value time with your roommates.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, those are things that you really believe in. And if you're saying yes to things that are, like, pulling you away,
mm-hmm.
that's where that anxiety and, like, that resentment comes up. And not only plans, but also, like, people and energy.
Mm-hmm.
So many women are extremely nurturing and, like I said earlier, people pleasers, and like have such strong desires to like be compassionate and be caring and nurturing to their friends. But, you know, you have to set boundaries around what is consuming so much energy from you and like solving someone else's problems
mm-hmm.
prior to putting your needs first. You know, you're not a doormat. You have needs that you have to take care of prior to someone else's. Otherwise, that leaves us empty.
So with that, what about people that you just said, you know, you're not a doormat, you have needs. So then we have people, and I'm guilty of it too.
Yeah.
We have people that we look at having everything so like easily, not laid out, but they've got so much fortune or they've got so much, you might look at it like luck or charisma, that it looks like they just float through life. And then there's the, Then there's like the single mom of two who works a full-time job, who's just trying to get dinner on the table, who's just trying to, you know, get a workout class in. It looks like she has 1,000 obstacles. What about the person who, you know, has plenty of money in the bank, gets sleep, has a great job, has tons of friends, is actually genuinely happy all the time, but also suffers from anxiety?
Sure.
What about the people who have all those amazing things going on, and it's almost like they're not allowed to complain because they have so much, like, fortune, it looks like, bestowed upon them? So what, they're not allowed to feel sad, or they're not allowed to feel that anxiety? I see that all the time. And I've been guilty of, like, putting the kibosh on someone who's really, they're like, I have such bad anxiety. I'm like, oh, what could you have anxiety about? Things are good. And then I'm like, oh, shut up, Liza. Because then people look, I'm sure people look at my life and they're like, oh, wow,
yeah,
the picture of ease, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's just not the case. How do you allow people, how do you give people grace? And, like, if you have a friend who, and you're seeing this too, and you notice someone has anxiety, it doesn't matter what standpoint they're at in their life, how do you gracefully approach that and say, without resentment, without anything, just with love, like, I see you, I hear you, I'm, you know, here for you.
Oh my gosh. So as a person, you know, like with my friends and my family and like outside of the therapist office, I've learned so quickly to lead with compassion always, because as we know, you know, things look very differently on the outside than they might on the inside. And everybody has their own story, and to give someone permission to feel their feelings and just be is so liberating and so freeing. There's so much beauty that surrounds that. I think everybody deserves to feel that way. And I'm so grateful that my job has allowed me to understand how important that is for, you know, my friends and my family members. Because we all interpret and have a different narrative for every single situation and every narrative that we have in our lives. And no problem is any lesser or more than anyone else's issue. And I think, you know, just always being reminded to lead with compassion and, like, permissing someone to feel the feels.
We were watching, my roommates and I were watching this episode of The Bachelor last night. Yeah, shut up, guys. We were watching The Bachelor. It was on for 3 hours in my house. And there was this one girl who just cries all the time. And I don't know her name. I have no idea. But in the beginning of the season, I was just like, God, she's a crybaby, or she's, you know, dramatic, or what have you. And then towards the end of the season, she was still crying all the time, but she was owning it, and everyone just kept being like, what, you think crying's gonna solve your issues? You think blah 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 blah. And so everyone was just shitting on this girl for crying or for being upset and for sharing her emotions and being super vocal. And I did not realize it. I had a complete 180. I went from being so turned off by this girl because she was just so dramatic and heavy to being like, get it, because nobody can tell you that you can't feel this way. You're the only one here who's, like, being open. And I know that's such a silly, you know, silly comparison to make, which is on The Bachelor, but that's real life.
Yes.
And I watched other people bully this girl for having emotion, for feeling emotion. And I feel like we do that in so many ways. Anyways, that's a tangent. I might even cut that out. Anyways, but there's also, we just touched on it a little bit, with stress and anxiety, what are some measurable tips people can take away if they're starting to feel their triggers being fired up? What if, you know, they're at work and they all of a sudden get these emails, but then they realize they have a deadline, and then they, you know, they start to feel these things flood in.
Sure.
What are some things that you might tell a client to help rein in those emotions and understand and process them?
Sure. So I think the most important thing is to actually understand your triggers, right? So, like, asking yourself, how did I feel prior to this anxiety happening? And, like, whatever it is that anxiety feels like, obviously that's so different for all of us, but like, how did I feel before this happened? Okay. And if that was in a calm, cool, collected state, then I can identify, or you can identify, your trigger. So if that's like work emails or like someone perceiving that you've done something wrong,
ooh, that's a big
sticky one.
Ouchie.
Yeah. Yeah. So then you can identify right then and there, okay, this is my trigger. And if possible, you know, like step away from the situation, you know, observe yourself, like sit in whatever it is that you're feeling. If that's like going for a walk and, you know, really thinking about, okay, I feel this way because of X, Y, and Z. And then going back and doing something called, I love this so much, decatastrophizing. So immediately, right, we worry of like, holy moly, this is a catastrophe, like worst case scenario. I'm going to get fired because this person thinks that I've done something wrong, right? Mm-hmm. So decatastrophizing in terms of saying, okay, what is my worst case scenario? And if in this case it's, I'm going to get fired from my job, you know, what's the likelihood of that happening? Probably slim, probably none. Mm-hmm. And then if that does happen, let's just say, for sake of example, that that issue happens, that you get fired. Are you going to be okay in 6 months? Hell yeah. You're probably going to find another job. Will you be okay in 2? Yes. Will you be okay next week if you get fired? Yeah. I mean, things might be a little crummy and you might like need to sort some things out, but really decatastrophizing that like end of the world feeling, mm-hmm. overlooming feeling that you have, and putting it into reality, like changing those negative thoughts into something more realistic. And that's a lot of work that I do in here. So cognitive behavioral therapy is like rearranging those negative thoughts into something more realistic. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't have to necessarily be something positive, mm-hmm. just something more realistic. Mm-hmm. And then identifying the triggers. But to answer your question, so, you know, being able to identify the trigger, step away, mm-hmm. Get some breath, go for a walk, whatever it is that you might be able to do at that time, decatastrophize, like bring it back down to reality, mm-hmm. and breathe. And take a moment before you respond or react to the situation.
Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of people get in trouble with that. They become reactive, not responsive.
Yes.
And I'm totally guilty of it. I will, I mean, spitfire, lash. And I'm like, I will look back at myself and replay that scenario over and over and over in my mind.
Yeah.
But I know if I had just taken like 10 deep breaths, or if I had exited, or just not opened the text message or responded right away, it wouldn't have come with so much fire. And then, you know, it would have alleviated a lot of the anxiety that came from my reaction that I was actually in control of.
Sure.
I think that's hard, is realizing that we actually are in control of so much, like our reasoned mind. And it's just daily stoic, yes. But yeah, I think that control has a lot to do with it.
Yeah.
Thinking that things are out of our control, when actually the only thing that matters is our mind, which is in our control,
mm-hmm.
which is hard to say because so many people, I sometimes feel like I just can't control it.
Sure.
Which in a sense is normal, but it doesn't make it easier.
No, absolutely not.
And
I think that's, like, the beauty in it,
mm-hmm.
you know, especially in, like, the process of therapy. The beauty in that is it's, like, ongoing work of practicing
mm-hmm.
how to control our thoughts,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, like, once you identify that trigger,
mm-hmm.
you can say, okay, I am totally capable and totally able to control this emotion, control this feeling
mm-hmm.
prior to any angst happening. Or if it does, you're prepared for it.
Exactly. I think that, yeah, preparation is
mm-hmm.
huge. And, yeah, then there's no panic. But taking a detour from where we are
sure.
now, I know that, like we talked about, your demographic is women,
yeah.
typically in Charleston, who are, around the Charleston area,
yeah.
but, you know,
no,
South
perfect.
Carolina, who are in their maybe 20 to 40s, and maybe they're moms, maybe they're single, maybe they're, you know, whatever. But what are some other things that come up a lot in this either time of year or in the past year revolved around relationships, whether it be familial, friendship, love? You know, what are some things that people are struggling with? Is it connection? Is it finding that deep connection? Is it finding anyone, thinking they're alone? Mm-hmm. Like, is it thinking they have too many options? Like, what's going on?
Well, I think, you know, we've talked about this a little bit in terms of relationships in Charleston, and the particular demographic that I work with, a lot of them are struggling to find a relationship, you know, to find a significant other. And, you know, oftentimes they feel like, oh, Charleston's so exhausting, or this is such a tricky area.
Like, there's so many broads here. So many girls.
So many wonderful people.
So, yes, that's a nice truly way of saying it.
So, you know, that is definitely like a common theme. And also, I think that kind of boils down to feelings of self-worth. Mm-hmm. So, like, that's eventually where we get. And a huge thing, like, oh my gosh, I can remember sitting, which this is so lovely. I'm so happy that, you know, I did this. Like, sitting on the opposite side of the chair, like, being on the couch in the therapist room is, holy shit, mind-blowing, because it gives you so much respect and so much honor for people that come in here and have the courage to, like, sit on that couch. And I remember my therapist asking me, like, what makes you worthy? And I was so stumped and just sat there and was like, I guess my career, my, like, relationships with my friends, my, I don't know, you know, like, rattling off all of these things. And such a beautiful thing that she said is, she was like, aren't you just worthy because you were born?
Oh, Jesus.
And I just, like, sat there and just, you know, sobbed, of course, but
there's so much sobbing that happens in here, but it's so good.
But it is so good. But that is something that I lead with now, you know, asking women, like, what is it that makes you worthy? And it's not something that has to be earned. It's not something that's taken away. We are all inherently worthy. We're automatically worthy of love. We're automatically worthy of acceptance. And it doesn't have to do with anything aside from simply being born as a human on this earth. But to sort of circle back to your relationship question, mm-hmm. that sort of boils down to, like, who am I worthy of dating, or who is worthy of my love, and am I worthy of this person's love? And the answer is always yes, you are 100% worthy.
Mm-hmm. And so for people that are, you know, trying to not figure out, but really trying to remap out their mind to think that, to know and understand that they are worthy and have that be their automatic emotion, which I'm sure is, you know, 1% of people are able to automatically just say, I am worthy, I am loved, I am me, you know, all of these things. So what are, you know, I see all the time, and again, I'm guilty of it, these people seeking out validation from external sources, mm-hmm. People seeking out words of affirmation, gifts, whatever your love language is, mm-hmm. and whether it's just someone who needs to listen, you know, they need someone to listen to them. When it comes to validation, like external validation, mm-hmm. I know that that comes down to self-worth, but what are some ways of recognizing ways that we act once in a while, like, maybe this is just therapy for me, I don't know, but what are some ways, like, if there's a day where someone's feeling like they just need a compliment, they need words of affirmation, they need some type of validation to defend their worth and their mm-hmm. honor, what are some ways to get around that? Because I feel like I even see it all the time, mm-hmm. even if it's not within myself, I see it all the time, and it's people, they need attention. They, you know, they're acting in ways that I know that that's not their typical way of acting when they get around certain people.
Yeah.
Who, the validation, I think that's a trigger word for me and a lot of people. Mm-hmm. What do you hear about that? What do you think about that? What are some common misconceptions or roots of where that comes from?
So I think it's so natural for all of us to seek validation, mm-hmm. and to not, like, punish ourselves for wanting that validation. We all want human connection and we all desire love. So to seek that out is completely fine. To define our worthiness in those things, that's where sort of the issue lies. So I would ask someone, for your example, someone who's sort of like misbehaving or acting out in front of a certain group of people or, you know, mm-hmm. whatever that looks like for them. Like, I would ask them if they were sitting in this room with me, how would you feel or what would your life look like or feel like without that response to your behavior? Like, without that validation, how would you feel? And their answer might be, like, no one likes me, or I don't have a social support group, mm-hmm. you know, something like that. Mm-hmm. And obviously social support is very important, but, you know, in terms of their worthiness or their validating emotions, they have to find ways to be able to validate themselves without having other people validate them. Mm-hmm. So without having that group of people or without misbehaving. And that could be going to like the root of their childhood. You know, mm-hmm. maybe they never received, you know, the love and care that they so deservingly needed and desired. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like working through that internal landscape and really discovering like, why don't you feel worthy? Like, mm-hmm. where is that showing up for you? And how can we get you to a place where you do?
I love that. Just, you know, it was just came out of my back pocket. I really had no idea where that was going. That makes me feel a lot better of knowing that we don't have to, like, it's normal
yeah.
to seek out validation, but basically just don't put so much stock in it because
sure.
you are worthy anyways, you know?
Precisely.
Just, you know? It's like, that's great. Compliments are great.
Yeah.
But don't become dependent on them
mm-hmm.
type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I know that when we first started working together a while ago, we did the Enneagram. And I've done, I think, a couple podcast episodes on this, and I'm sure I've talked about you on here. And by the way, if you guys are getting a ton of value from this, which I'm positive that you are, you can always check Morgan out on Instagram. Her Instagram for your business is welcoming.wellness.
Uh-huh.
Welcoming.wellness. Make sure you check it out. I plugged it on my Instagram. You're taking new clients, right?
Yeah.
Yes? Heck yeah. And y'all, she's, wow, changed my life. So getting back to it, we did the Enneagram test. Can you go into the Enneagram a little bit and why it might be valuable? We don't have to a ton, but I really think that, like, so many people...
Yeah.
And not like we have to be this thing. You know, it's not like, oh, I'm an Aries. I was born in March. It's you know, I feel sure. like it changes a little bit more than that in different phases of your life in a way. But what do you think about the Enneagram to someone who maybe takes it really seriously mm-hmm. or someone who's never done it?
So a huge aspect to happiness is relationships, right?
Mm-hmm.
Our relationship with ourselves... And, of course, our relationship with others. And I think the Enneagram does such a beautiful job of honing in on our internal landscape. So discovering, you know, where we thrive and where we stress and, like, what empowers us, where we are when we're not being as productive as we would like to be, and how we respond to certain situations. So I think the Enneagram just does such a beautiful job of, like, self-discovery
mm-hmm.
and, in turn... It allows us to understand how we best communicate with other people and how other people can best communicate with us. So I don't always use it, but sometimes when I feel like someone might be struggling with like who just genuinely who they are as a person or like mm-hmm. what is helping them tick, you know, or what works for them, what doesn't work for them in terms of their core beliefs and how they respond to things, that's when I'll lead with the Enneagram.
Okay.
And it's sort of like a Myers-Briggs. I just love it.
Yeah.
I think it's a... Just personally, I think it's a bit more accurate.
I agree.
Yeah.
So the Enneagram, it's basically a personality test, mm-hmm. but it goes more in depth as to, like, who you are as a being.
Yes.
And I think everyone should try it. Maybe take a couple different types.
Definitely.
So that you can see.
Definitely.
But once you start to read into it, it's easy to see that you definitely do fall into one.
Yeah.
And what, there are nine, I think?
Mm-hmm.
9 or 10. But, anyways, if you are interested in, like, learning more about yourself, I think that was a big one when we first started. It's just, I was like, what am I doing? I'm
yeah.
scatterbrained. If you, it's good for grounding, but then also, like, I feel like I didn't put too much stock into it, but it was a nice reference point.
Absolutely. And it sort of gives you kind of a foundation of,
yeah.
oh my goodness, this makes so much sense as to why I respond a certain way to these mm-hmm. different things, or... This makes so much sense as to, like, where my core values come from or
mm-hmm.
why I believe this certain thing exists. So,
humbling. Yeah,
it's very humbling because oftentimes your response is, holy shit, I'm a what? I'm a three. I'm an achiever.
You're a three, right?
Yes.
I'm a three, too. Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. It's a lot. It's a lot.
Yeah, it's a great test, though.
It is a great test. Mm-hmm. And because I'm single right now, and I'm just curious. Yeah. So relationships.
Yeah.
What are some, let's get lighter. What's something that, like, it's almost Valentine's Day. You know, people are either going to love it or they're going to hate it. Yeah. Or they're going to completely have forgotten that it was even coming up. I love love, and I hope everyone has a nice day with whatever they do. But I want to know, what are some really healthy, beautiful, fun things for couples to do, whether they have been dating for a month, whether they don't even know if they're boyfriend, girlfriend yet, what if, or, you know, they've been together for years? What are some, like, really great communication tools for someone? Let's just say, like, Jack and Jill are dating. Jack doesn't like to talk about emotion. No, Jack loves to talk about emotions.
Yes.
Jack loves to talk about emotions.
I love
emotions.
Jack.
And Jill is avoidant, but she loves him. She listens, but she doesn't really respond. And they love each other so much, but he's like, I just want Jill to get closer to my heart. And then Jill is like, I love you, but I don't want to, like, talk, you know, I'll just, like, rub your back or something. So communication-wise, what are some good ways to, like, meet level ground in relationships?
Oh, my gosh. I love this so much. So something that is so vital, so important in relationships is communication, obviously. But something that I love to help couples practice is reframing and rephrasing and identifying the emotion, okay? So when you're talking with your significant other, it's really easy to totally miss the emotion. And, like, totally miss what they're saying because already we're thinking about, like, our response or we're defensive or we're being combative. So I love to have couples, Jack and Jill, you know, if Jack is saying, Jill, I feel like you're not really emotionally engaged and you don't ever want to talk to me, you know, I would have Jill sort of rephrase what he's saying or literally repeat what he's saying and tag an emotion onto that. So she might say, Jack, I hear you say that, you know, I never talk to you, we're not emotionally connected, and that must feel really frustrating for you. So, and then Jack can either decide, like, yeah, I do feel frustrated, or no, that's actually totally missing the mark, this is how I feel. So really helping couples identify what the other person is feeling, and the best way to do that is to learn how to be a listener and rephrase what the other person is saying, or literally just repeat it back. And it really helps. You would be mind blown to just like really slow things down in conversations with your significant other. And oftentimes we just make assumptions that someone is feeling a certain way or they need something. And we totally miss the mark. We totally miss the mark. And without having those types of conversations, things can get a little tricky.
Yeah. And that even goes back to fostering good things in the relationship.
Yes.
Like, Jill loves to, you know, loves the way that Jack grabs her butt in public. And then Jack loves the way that Jill will, you know, stand up for him all the time, like, is so proud of him, preaches. Mm-hmm. And so you can also tag those positive emotions to
for
it.
Sure.
Like, I hear that you love when, you know, you can show me off and we are in public and we're proud of each other and all these things, and that makes you feel respected and heard and loved.
Definitely.
And that's hot, I think.
Yes.
Like, that is, there is nothing hotter in a relationship than knowing that your person is proud of you or that you just came to some agreement, you know, that you overcame this obstacle and you both understand, like, something good that you're both doing. So I think communication can be, like, we dig ourselves into these holes sometimes of only focusing on communication when it's about the bad stuff.
Definitely.
So I think that
such a good point, Alyssa.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's such a good point.
Even our friends, like, you know, you might be best friends with someone for a long time, but then things only start to get rocky and you really start to realize it once there's an issue.
Mm-hmm.
There doesn't always have to be an issue. It's like preventative medicine for
Truly.
Communication for a relationship.
Truly.
Speaking of preventative medicine,
yeah.
Self-care. We talked about this for a second. We won't touch on it long.
Yeah.
I won't take too much of your time. But self-care, self-love, all phrases we hear all the time.
Yeah.
Like, constantly. You can literally go on Instagram. I'm sure my phone can hear me right now, and as soon as I look at it again, it's going to say, like, loofahs for sale, bath bombs for sale.
For sure.
What are some nice little ways for self-care for, you know, Valentine's Day is coming up. If you want to give yourself a little self-care, what are some ways to do that on your own or with friends?
Oh, man. There's millions,
on
right?
On the spot.
Okay, so I always go back to this in terms of self-care, but I think boundaries are number one.
That's a good one.
You know, I think we always leap to, like, you were just saying, like, a bath bomb or working out or getting enough sleep, which is definitely a priority. Mm-hmm. But I always go back to boundaries in terms of self-care, and, like, respecting your boundaries is number one on the list. Mm-hmm. And, like, self-care in terms of, like, sticking to commitments, mm-hmm. Sticking to your commitments as well, like, prioritizing what you're committed to. And if that's 8 hours of sleep a night, if that's lots of social time with your girls or your guys, perfect. Like, stick to those commitments and make you feel really good and in alignment. Drinking enough water, my gosh.
That's a good one. Yeah. Yeah.
Moving, like, 30 minutes of sweat a day, getting outside, breathing, also sitting still. Like I said earlier, less is more sometimes.
I love that.
Yeah.
Self-care is free. That's great. But I need to go home and just sit down. But either way, this has been amazing. I know there's so much more we can unpack here in this tiny little room. And there's just so much heart in here. And I just appreciate everything you do. We're going to hopefully have Morgan on again at some point.
Yeah, I would love that.
And would love y'all's feedback on this podcast episode, what you liked, what you want more of, what you want less of. And I know Morgan is so eloquent. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Eliza.
This has been wonderful. Please plug away. Give all your social. Where can you find you? Pimp yourself out. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, you can make an appointment with me. Can send me an email, morgan@welcomingwellness.net. Follow me on Instagram. I love to, you know, throw some little tidbits and nuggets at you and some guided journaling, that kind of fun stuff on welcoming.wellness. And then, you know, my website is welcomingwellness.net. So truly feel honored, Eliza, to be on here. I love chatting about all the important things and, like, sharing such beauty with our community. Such a special place. So thank you
for making such a safe space. I'm gonna put all of this in the show notes so that you all have it. And this is episode, I think, 69.
Woo!
Or 70.
Go ahead, Eliza.
Happy Valentine's Day. I will talk to you guys next week on the Hotter Than Health podcast.